That's the show. Hour two, Whitey in for Nick. Nick will be back soon. We appreciate Whitey sitting in the chair. Until then, JJ and Simone on the other side of the glass. We also appreciate 22 likes in the first hour of the show at youtube.com/SackdownSports. All because of Whitey. 100% because of Whitey. No doubt about that. Also, check out SacktownSports.com. We've talked a lot, and we will talk more about the 49ers and OTAs underway. Guys on the field in pads doing things. Not a lot, but they're doing things. And Emil Fragoso is covering it for Sacktown Sports. Check it out at SacktownSports.com for,
by the way,
all
Ramey,
the latest there.
Yes, I apologize, Rami, first of all. I apologize.
Sorry,
for that.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't happen. Yeah. You asked me against which team Brandon Allen threw for 371. It was the Houston Texans.
Oh, okay.
They're still an NFL team.
So it was the USFL. I was right.
371 and two
touchdowns. Okay. Oh, no.
I think I said Steelers. It was, in fact, the Houston Texans.
So I was right. It was a USFL team. I was not mistaken. Speaking of getting updates on things, it seems like every day there's an update on the A's, who now have reached a tentative agreement, Whitey, with Nevada State and local officials on a stadium funding plan after weeks of negotiations over how much public assistance the state will contribute to a $1.5 billion ballpark in Las Vegas, according to a joint statement issued on Wednesday. The agreement between the A's, the governor's office, state treasurer, and Clark County officials indicates a full funding bill will be introduced in the Nevada legislature in the coming days, with less than 2 weeks until the legislative sessions end. It still needs approval from both the state Senate and the state assembly, and they have until June 5th to get it done. This feels like another, we got it, when they really don't got it. Why?
Yeah,
like, they
know.
Still need to get this thing through a vote by June 5th, and I don't know that they necessarily have all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted to get this thing done and actually push it through to Las Vegas at this point. It's very, very weird.
Well, they definitely do not have the T's crossed and the I's dotted because, and I think you alluded to this, according to reports, the team has not filed any paperwork with the state. There is no paperwork. And the draft today, let's see, the agreement that they came to today, they're drafting it now. They're like writing
as
it.
As we speak.
They literally have not crossed the T's, dotted the I's. And then the state legislature does adjourn on June 5th, but I know there's been some talk of maybe they will have a special session to extend it so that they have an opportunity to address this. I don't understand who's driving this, though, because it seems like nobody really, other than Fisher and Caval, has much of an appetite for it. And I guess, is it the mayor of Las Vegas is also?
No, it was the governor of Nevada.
Governor of Nevada,
Joe Lombardo.
Those three, other than them, I don't know who else wants this to happen.
And in the joint statement, they did not give a specific number for the amount of public assistance that the A's will ask for. And they say that they're going to pivot from an early agreement that would have required a heftier $500 million price tag that many lawmakers signaled was too high. So I still don't know that they necessarily know how this is going to get done or that the A's are moving to Las Vegas. But Whitey, my question to you, and by the way, Whitey, a huge baseball fan. I think Whitey is the first person who has sat in this studio with me and asked me to turn the baseball game on the TV. Yesterday, he was like, I think the Giants are playing. You want to turn that on? I was like, yeah, sure. Let's do that. I appreciate that.
Why are you a Giant or an A?
A's.
You're an A's fan.
No question.
Still.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's my question to you. Does it, let's say somehow this thing falls through in Las Vegas. And if it does, the mayor made clear, we talked about it last week and played some comments by her, that if this thing were to fall through in Las Vegas, that they would welcome getting back to the negotiating table. Can the brand be saved for you as an A's fan, Whitey? Can the A's win you back, or are you too sour on this organization at this point?
I think only if the team were sold, and we've seen that before when Charlie Finley drove the team. I mean, he tore it apart to save money, and then they were sold. The A's were sold, and the Haas family bought them and rebuilt the whole franchise. We've seen that happen. We've seen someone come in and revitalize the whole franchise. But I think with current ownership, I don't see them going, hey, you know what? Our bad. we're, you know, rooted in Oakland. We were always rooted in Oakland.
We told you that's going to fly. We told you we rooted in Oakland.
So there, the current ownership's particular brand of A's baseball, I would guess that it's broken. But there's still people hoping, you know, hoping against hope that not only do they stay, but they get new ownership.
They are 10-40 right now, man. The fourth worst start through the first 50 games of the season ever, and the worst start since the 1932 Boston Red Sox. I get it. I get how you're and Jay, you said something similar. You're not coming back unless John Fisher is no longer the owner. Even if they were to stay in Oakland, you're not coming back until John Fisher is no longer the owner.
It's one of those things where when you're in a relationship, and you can pick any relationship you want to be in, things have to progress and change, right? You can't stay the same. And you guys, Whitey, you could definitely speak to this. I think you've been married way longer than I have. You've been in a relationship, which to me, that's huge, man. That shows me that you are able to transform, reinvent yourself in certain ways. And I think that's what it takes. What a relationship is so difficult to stay the same and not progress. And so that's, for me, that's what it is with the Oakland A's. You guys have been, the A's have been giving me this same product for too long. And now we need to transform. We need to, you know, formulate into something different. And for me, that comes with different ownership. I'm just tired of seeing the same sad story, you know, not putting out the best team, not spending money when you made money. And I'm not counting your pockets there, fella. But at the same time, you made money through the pandemic. You know, come on. There weren't a lot of people who did that, but you were one of those people. It has to be on a different playing field. I'm not even so much as I know the stadium's coming, but I need to see someone else running.
Yeah. Tying back into that relationship metaphor, you need Oakland A's fans need secure, functioning relationship. They don't got it right now.
Oakland A's fans, they used to root for the great A's team, 73, 74, or 72, 73, 74, World Series champs. That team was broken up. The Bash Brothers later on, that team ended up getting broken up. And then you had the Moneyball A's, and that team got broken up. And just a couple of years ago, the A's were really good. They had an excellent team.
Yeah.
And this ownership, not only did they break that team up, but then on top of that, the whole rooted in Oakland thing, they have broken the bond of trust between the team and the fans. They've broken it like twice really drastically over the last couple seasons.
That whole rooted in Oakland thing is just insulting. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's just insulting.
The signs are still there now.
Yeah, that's a slap in the face. That's spitting in the face of A's fans.
Yeah.
To say rooted in Oakland while you're actively trying to leave Oakland. You know what I mean?
Like, why
you always lying?
How do you even have the gall, the temerity to do something like that? And then this is also kind of a slap in the face to A's fans. Just a quick blurb in this article I was reading about this agreement that's in place now. The project includes the most private investment of any stadium in Major League Baseball, according to the release. And Jay's over there just shaking his head. Mm-hmm. And you said something. I don't know if you can even crack a mic open right now without an FCC violation. So I understand, Jay, if you don't want. But now you got money. Now you got money when it comes to building a stadium in Las Vegas. But you haven't had money the whole time that
he's
that
actually
Oakland...
really mad back here.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell he's legitimately mad back there.
Yeah.
He does not, and I want to say they. I don't know how everybody in the A's organization feels. John Fisher does not want the A's to be in Oakland, period, point blank. That's the bottom line. There's no other way around it.
Don't you think if you had somebody with the wherewithal to redo the Coliseum and you got Bart there and you got all that land there and you're able to do some sort of, I don't know what it would be, shops or infrastructure. I mean, you could make a lot of money on that. And I'm not talking about Howard Terminal. That'd be great. I'm not talking about some pie in the sky. Well, we need this to come through and that report to come through. I mean, it's already there. The Coliseum is already, it's in a really good spot, really accessible.
Yeah, I've heard it's a fun train ride when the A's are good from Sacramento.
I mean, you jump right off and you walk over the bridge
right into the game.
Yeah. I know part of it, and this is something I had read, and excuse me for not remembering who wrote this, but most owners want control of the land around the new stadium or arena. And John Fisher and A's and Cavill, that's something we continue to hear Dave Cavill talk about, the president of the Oakland A's, talk about they want to be able to control the structures and things, condominiums, the townhomes, the hotels, the shops, you know, those type of things that aligned himself adjacent to the Howard Terminal. And Oakland has always said within their legislation, you have to build certain things. And that's kind of been one of their arguments with the A's is, look, to come in here, utilize the land, which we don't have a lot of in Oakland, it's at a premium, that you have to put install living quarters. And that's one of the major arguments with the A's. For me, what is so interesting about the John Fisher now all of a sudden having, you know, deep pockets. Now your pockets are overflowing. You Floyd Mayweather now.
He couldn't take care of the possum problem at the Coliseum.
And that's where I was going.
But he's about to set a record for private funding in a new stadium.
And you know what? This is the other part on top of that, Rami, is if that's the case, why have you not, why have you been literally stealing money from Major League Baseball and tricking these guys over not the last few years, excuse me, not past year, but years prior, to where you're ranking in the top five of shared money. You're stealing
revenue
money
sharing
from MLB.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Oakland's is not a small market. We're in the Bay Area. We're 8 minutes across the way from Sacramento. And on top of that, if anything, why not put out a product that we can come out and enjoy, even if it means
40.
Come on, man.
10 and 40, man.
I've said this on this show. To me, people can disagree. The Oakland A's have only went to try to win a championship one time in the last 20 years. And that's when they went and got Samardzija, they went and got John Lester, and they actually looked like they were trying to win a championship. Mm-hmm. Now, John Lester, with his chump self, he blew it, gave up the four-run lead. And I, you know, he's a Red Sox in my eye, so I'm going to call him a chump.
I got a soft spot, yeah, but I'll let
okay.
you have it.
I get you. Samardzija's okay. You should have been a tight end, fella. But that's my big gripe with them is – try and win. If nothing else, win. And maybe, as I say, you know, you build it, they'll come. If you build a good team, maybe A's fans who have always trickled into the Coliseum, come see the A's play, who have a great fandom, we would come.
It's too expensive. I can make – I'm with you. But from their standpoint, I can make more money being terrible. Why do I care? Why do I want to spend the money to be good? I can make more money the other way.
So let me ask you this, because I feel for you guys, because I mentioned Whitey a big baseball. I know Jay is a huge baseball fan. Simone has talked to me about loving to go to A's games back in the day. I've never been in a city or part of a fan base that lost a team, and I feel for you guys. What do you do? I know Jay can't go to the Giants. That's not in the cards. That can't
definitely
happen.
Not that, overrated ballpark out there. No,
hey,
so
hey,
what do you do now? Who do you tie your allegiances to, or are you just a baseball fan now?
Yeah,
what do you
agnostic
do?
Agnostic.
An agnostic baseball fan. What do you do?
You find yourself rooting against teams, I think, more than rooting for. Seriously. Yeah. Oh, the Dodgers lost. Yeah. You know, stuff like that.
Whitey entering the race.
Man, it's like art form.
Kind of pathetic, but
we can all get behind the Dodgers losing.
Whitey entering the race for hater of the year. I like it. I like it. That's
well, you get bitter. What are you going to do?
No, I get it, man. I get it.
Estuary Ruiz stole another base. Will we?
I don't know what I would do. That's why I'm legitimately asking. I don't know what I would do.
You know, it's interesting. I asked Raider fans that just a couple of years ago, and not really foreshadowing that I might have to ask myself that. So it's turned around and bit me.
Do you have an answer, or you don't know yet?
I don't know.
Still figuring that out.
I'm not going to be a Giants fan, I can
Padres?
Tell you that. I get behind. I'm rooting. You know, I picked them to win the World Series this year.
The Dodgers, that's like rooting for the Empire in Star Wars. No, you ain't doing that.
By the way, last inning last night, the Mariner fans, right, one out away from their win, they started doing that black stripes thing, or white stripes, probably white stripes thing. Hello. Come on. That's like the wave. What year is it?
Talk your
We're
mess,
done
Whitey.
With that, right? Grow up.
Coming up right
and
after
you're
this.
You're beating the A's. You're going to sing about beating the A's?
Whitey normally very level-headed. I got him worked up. Another usually very level-headed NBA talking head got very worked up. Hear why next, and you might have a point.
Paddles and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.
Tina Turner bringing us out of the break all afternoon long as we pay tribute to a legend. Rest in peace, Tina Turner. Coming up at 3:30, Keith Smith, NBA reporter for Spotrac, host of the Front Office show. I said this to open the show. Legitimately one of my favorite people to talk hoops with, Keith Smith. He joins us coming up at 3:30. Another guy who I trust their word when I hear them talk NBA. I think this guy is level-headed. He's thoughtful. He's smart. He's analytic, and that's Zach Lowe from ESPN and ESPN.com. I think he does really good work when it comes to covering the NBA. And
Low
I think
Post Podcast is a good name for podcast.
Always has a solid take when it comes to the sport, in my opinion. And this morning he was on Get Up, and I don't know that I've ever seen this before. Zach Lowe was upset about the way people have been talking about Anthony Davis.
Supposed to be a serious sports show.
Yeah, like what?
And? Every discussion about Anthony Davis and whether he's got the dog in him and whether he wants to ball enough should start. The headline should be, he has been the most dominant defensive player in the entire playoffs. Nobody wants to talk about defense. Everyone just wants to talk about defense. Where's the post moves, where's the ball. Every Lakers series, plot point number one for the other team has been, where is Anthony Davis on defense? Who is he guarding? How can we get him away from the basket? Because we are terrified of going anywhere near it.
See what we're
every
doing.
Single. So defense.
See what we're
the,
doing?
So defense.
Is we're doing it again.
No. That's not an excuse.
Legit. Zach, you made him Ben Wallace. He's Ben Wallace now. That's what
Ben Wallace never scored 21 points in a conference finals game and 40
saying.
Points in a different
he
conference.
He brings defense. That's what he brings.
So this is what we're going to do. We're going to be a basketball show. And we're just going to say, defense doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
the way we talk about Anthony Davis. It doesn't. You guys wave it away because he doesn't dominate the ball. If you look at the top 25 scorers in the NBA, three are centers. Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, and Nikola Jokic. Those two other guys are built different offensively than Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has never been, to his fault, I guess, a give-me-the-ball Hakeem Olajuwon post-up player. That's not who he is.
Well,
and if you want to say you wish you were that kind of player and you wish you could do that every game, that's fair. Just acknowledge that for half the game, he's the most dominant presence on the floor. Just acknowledge it.
That was this morning on Get Up. Zach Lowe getting upset at the narrative surrounding Anthony Davis. And after that, Alan Hahn brought up Ben Wallace again, and Zach Lowe was just screaming, stop bringing up Ben Wallace! Like, he was just irate. Does he have a point? Is the narrative unfair surrounding Anthony Davis?
Why? Ultimately, no. I mean, maybe a little bit. He's right. Anthony Davis had probably a really good postseason, but he's been brittle throughout his career. Not just depends if we're talking about Anthony Davis, the whole narrative of his career as a Laker, or just in these playoffs. And he's been inconsistent, and those are facts. And the Lakers, given what they gave up to get him, and they still haven't paid off the Pelicans. The Pelicans still have more coming from the Lakers in the Anthony Davis trade. That's not Anthony Davis's fault, but clearly the Lakers expect a lot from him, and he had definitely had his moments in the postseason. He was an excellent defender, but overall, I still think the fact that he hasn't been available to them as much as they would like leaves them with a taste of, he's good, but ... And I think that's totally fair.
I think we need to change, and I'm guilty of this as well. Who do we have on? Yes, Brian Geltziler from NBA radio and TV on SiriusXM and NBA TV.
Look, I voted for Embiid.
And I asked him about the that's a really good impression. I asked him about the up and down nature of Anthony Davis's game. And Brian, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading something into it that's not there. He almost seemed to take issue or take offense with my question, and then went on to make a similar case to what Zach Lowe was just making right there, which is, man, look at how dominant this guy has been defensively. I think that he has two things working against him when we talk about the narrative of Anthony Davis. One is that coming out of college or coming out of high school, he came straight out of high school, did he?
No.
Oh, no, he went to Kentucky for a year, right? Coming
out of high school.
Was it Duke or Kentucky? It was Kentucky, wasn't it?
Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was regarded as a guy who could be one of the best players in this league. And even early in his career, he showed
flashes.
He's been at times a top five.
I think he's been at times a top five player.
And I think that's still hung on him. Those expectations are still hung on him. And when he comes up short of that, people are still holding him to that standard. And also, LeBron needs more help than he's ever needed in his career, because he's 38 years old and he's in his 20th year in the league. So he needs more help than he's ever needed before. And so when Anthony Davis, goes, 6-for-15 from the field in an elimination game in game 4, people are looking at him and going, man, need more from you than that. LeBron needs more from you than that. The Lakers need more from you than that. I think those two things are working against him, but I think we need to, A, realize that he's 30 years old. He's a half dozen, at least, injuries removed from when we thought he was one of the best players on the planet. And B, like, don't expect him to be the Batman in the Batman and Robin relationship with him and LeBron James. He's not that dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that guy, and I think we need to stop holding him up to that standard. And when you do that and look at the things that Zach Lowe is talking about, he's a pretty damn good player and absolutely can be part of a championship team.
Zach Lowe says, look, we say he doesn't have enough dog in him, but he's a great defender. And actually, both those things can be true. The issue that a lot of people have with Anthony Davis is he just doesn't play enough. Just his games for his career, you look at, he's never come close to playing. Well, he's never played 82 games. He's played 75, I think, but he misses a lot of time. And there's a perception, maybe it's unfair, but there's a perception that basketball may be not the most important thing to Anthony Davis. So both things, and that's not fair, but a lot of people that know a lot about the game wonder about that. So that's the issue. It's not, hey, you can't say he's not a dog. Look at what a great defender he is. And to your point, you look at his numbers, career numbers, the numbers he had this year, they're great. They're great numbers. But still there are issues with him. The way he plays, it just seems like he needs to be more available to his team than he's ever been at any point in his career.
Yeah, I'm not one to question a guy's toughness or desire, you know what I mean?
But, well, it's not fair, but it is something that people, I mean, we have to enter it, and it is part of the conversation with him because a lot of people feel that way. But I
think
understand what you're saying.
The availability is a fair concern to have. No matter the reason for it, you know what I mean? Whether they are legit injuries and you want to call it injury prone or bad luck, or it is a lack of desire or whatever the case might be. The bottom line is he's not as available as you'd like him to be.
Need him to be.
That is a dent in the reputation or the value of a guy as a professional athlete. I don't think there's any denying that. We'll get into this. We'll get into some Eastern Conference Finals talk, maybe a couple Kings questions with Keith Smith of Spotrac and the host of the Front Office Show. He'll join us next. The Golden Pipes of Tina Turner and Whitey Gleason on the Cattles and Rami Show. Whitey in for Nick Cattles this afternoon. Nick will be back soon. Simone and Jay on the other side of the glass. A romantic edition or not so romantic edition of Draft Mockery coming up at 3:44. But joining us now to talk some hoops from Spotrac and the Front Office Show, pleasure to welcome in friend of the show, Keith Smith. Keith, how are you this afternoon, my man?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Is LeBron retiring?
No, I don't think so. I know that's been the whole story, and he's been accused of just trying to control the narrative and deflect from the Lakers losing, and maybe there's some truth in there. But my guess is, it was raw, emotion after, his season came to an end. And it's got to be the most difficult season of his career. And, they were left for dead in early February. Then they made, a series of trades and became a pretty good team, made the run of the West Finals. And I'm sure he was physically and emotionally hurting after that game, as, good friend Carmelo Anthony retired earlier that morning. And Dwayne Wade's been retired. And he's probably looking around saying, like, man, I'm the last one left. My foot hurts, and I got to do, 5 months. I got to be ready to do this all over again. I'm sure there is some doubt in his mind, but my guess is we'll see him back on the court again next season.
Keith, was it just me, or was last night the first time in this series, and maybe the first time since the first play-in game, that Miami looked old?
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. They looked a little slow, especially, Kyle Lowry didn't look very good in that game. Jimmy Butler looked like, he's maybe a little tired, which is, you've had a month of him really carrying the team now. You saw their limitations without Tyler Hero in the lineup of creating offense and the like. And, and the Celtics cut after. I still think Miami's probably going to win this series. But if any team was ever going to do it, I think it could be, this type of situation where the Celtics still have a couple home games left. If it goes that far, your shooting variance can swing very widely for both of these teams. So, we'll see. I still think Miami gets it, but, if it's ever going to happen, this is the kind of situation it could happen in.
That's what Whitey said, too, that just with this Celtics team and this Heat team, because I think most people looked at it on paper coming into this series, although people have been doing this to the Heat all playoffs, but you go, the Celtics are the better team. And then it's just been a weird NBA season, Keith, when you look at the way that things have gone. This might be the year and the series where we see the streak of, what, 150 series that went 3-0 going the way of the team that was up 3-0. This, and I'm with you. I think Miami probably takes it, but give the Celtics one more, and I start to question if I have to take that back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to happen eventually, right? We never thought a 16 would be to 1 in the NCAA tournament. It happened. We never thought, you know, teams would come from 0-3 in other sports, and it happened. And you know, when you look at these two teams, Miami was not a great shooting team all season long. They were in previous years, and maybe they've, you know, kind of, you know, gotten back to what they should be late in this season here. Boston was a very good shooting team, shot very poorly, despite the fact that they generated a ton of really good looks. So they can turn that around. And what I've been saying all day today is, if the Celtics win game 5, the pressure is all on Miami. And if things start to go a little sideways, I wouldn't be surprised, even though they're a veteran group, things start to get a little tight, guys start to press a little bit, things just get a little bit messy. And, you know, and if it gets back to 7, you know, game 7 in Boston on Memorial Day, a day off where that crowd's probably going to enjoy a little bit of day drinking and some fun, you know, that could be an all-time environment if it gets there. So, you know, if it's ever going to happen, you know, this is the conditions are right, but don't think it will. But, you know, we'll see. You know, tomorrow will tell us a lot.
Keith, as you know, if you go back to last season, before the Celtics took off in January, there was talk of, gee, maybe Tatum and Brown, maybe they're not compatible. Then January, they took off and they went to the finals and probably should have won that series against the Warriors. Well, if they get bounced early here, I mean, is that on the table again? Are the Celtics in again going to be wondering about Tatum and Brown and whether they're compatible on the floor together?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the Celtics themselves feel very comfortable with those two guys playing together. But I think the questions that'll come in is Jaylen Brown is eligible for the, you know, so-called Supermax extension. If Boston offers him that and he doesn't sign it, which I think is unlikely, that'll cause a whole lot of issues. There's questions of, you know, can the Celtics even give him the full Supermax, you know, and feel good about their ability to build a functional roster around him and Tatum making a well in advance of $100 million a season a couple years from now when, you know, the new penalties are coming in the new CBA for the most expensive teams. That starts to become a question that needs to be asked too. So I think, you know, there's some uncertainty related to Jaylen Brown staying with the Celtics long term, but I don't know that it's related to him and Tatum's partnership. I think everybody looks at it as, you know, hey, these two guys are two all-NBA guys, two great wing players, which everybody else is looking for. You know, why would we split this up voluntarily?
Are these two teams playing for the right to lose to Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets?
It's certainly possible. I'm not going to count either Boston if they, you know, pull off the 0-3 comeback, and you know, or Miami if they, you know, move on here in the next game or so. I think they'll have earned it. But you know, Denver's playing great. They're playing the best basketball of anybody right now. The team is they're just deep enough. You know, they have great functional depth, as I like to call it. They're not going to overwhelm you with 10, 11, 12 guys, but their top 7, 8 guys are pretty good, and they feel pretty good about them. Jokic is doing everything that you want him to do. And Jamal Murray looks like the guy that he was turning into during the bubble season. Looks like he's fully back to being that scoring weapon. And then on any given night, you can get a 30-point game from Michael Porter Jr. So the Nuggets are going to be really, really tough to beat.
I think we're seeing some really interesting in this postseason, Keith. Wondering what you think. You look at Denver, they basically run their offense through Jokic. The Celtics, I know Derek White's basically a point guard. They don't have a traditional point guard. The Lakers don't either. I know Kyle Lowry is kind of that for Miami. But are we seeing kind of the evolution of the position and a changing of the point guard, if you will? Teams are moving away from the traditional point guard and running their offenses more through bigger players?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not a new thing to this year. This has been probably about a 3 or 4 year evolution to this point. Everybody likes to scream and yell, you know, when things go sideways up, they've got to get a traditional point guard in there to run the show. They need to get a traditional point guard. And my counter always is, okay, who? In the, by, without a doubt, the response is someone like Chris Paul. Well, Chris Paul's one of one.
Yeah.
Right? He's the only one left. Point guards now are they're like anybody else. They're scoring players. They've got to be shooters. They don't necessarily run the offense. The days of John Stockton brings it up, runs pick and roll 100 times a game, and, you know, sets guys up. Those days are gone. We don't. The league doesn't run that way anymore. The defenses are also too good. These guys who are, you know, 6 feet, 6'1". It's too easy to trap them if they're kind of everything has to flow through them. Teams can blow those offenses up and make problems for those guys. So I think, you know, we're just in that cycle right now where that's not where we're at. We don't run the offense that way. We run it through, you know, whoever your best player is, kind of regardless of position, and then you just keep it moving that way.
Let me ask you a Kings-related question, if I could, before we let you go. Talking with Keith Smith of Spotrac and the Front Office Show here on Kettles and Rami. Let's say the Kings have some more growing pains to go through, and it's 2-3 years from now that they're actually ready to compete for a championship. Who in the West do you think gets in the way?
That's a good question. I think Denver has a chance to still be there 2-3 years from now because most of their guys are signed, or, you know, they've got the ability to sign. I think, you know, by that point, I have to imagine the Warriors will have aged out and then moved on. I don't know that it'll be this iteration of the Clippers, but when you have the kind of money Steve Ballmer has, and he seems very, very willing to continue to spend, I think there's a chance that they're, you know, a pretty good team. And then who knows if Victor Wembanyama is everything we think he is, San Antonio Spurs could be there very, very quickly. The Houston Rockets, who have a, you know, they've got a ton of cap space. If they don't, you know, I think signing James Harden would be a mistake, but they could, you know, turn that situation around very, very quickly as well. So there's definitely going to be other teams, but I think the Kings, you know, because of where they're at, you know, kind of on their age curve, you know, should be pretty good, because it looks like the other team I would have picked, the Memphis Grizzlies, looks like they're doing kind of everything they can to make sure they're not going to be that team. You know, they just keep, you know, kind of stepping all over themselves.
You know, Keith, folks can follow you at Keith Smith NBA for all the basketball stuff like we're talking about here. But today, you shared something on Twitter. You quote tweeted this and said, "I've watched this 5 times and cracked up each time, that I also just have to keep watching over and over again." Whitey, did you see this? It's a video of a van just driving into a wrecking ball over and over again.
No.
And higher and higher
no
speeds.
No basketball tonight. I have something to watch now.
It gets up to 300 miles per hour, and it hits the wrecking ball and just goes flying. It's got to fly like half a mile, three quarters of a mile. Keith, it's amazing. I thank you for sharing it, and I see why you've watched it 5 times.
Yeah, and I think it's very clearly AI driven, because it's like an old medieval times mace that's just randomly hanging in the highway. So I think we learned 2 lessons, right? You know, if you're going to speed, you better keep your eye open for, you know, maces just randomly dropping down like it's a game of Mario Kart or something. I don't know, but it tickled my fancy today. I couldn't stop watching and laughing every single time.
It was very cool. Very, very cool. That's Keith Smith. Check out his work at Spotrac and on the Front Office Show and at Keith Smith NBA on Twitter for basketball and fun stuff like that. We appreciate the time, Keith.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And he joins me on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop.
I see why he's your favorite person. Now.
You were watching it as we were talking. That's very cool, right? I don't know. So I like
strange.
I like action
movies.
Oh,
there
movies,
you go.
Right?
I hadn't seen that part of it before.
But watch, it keeps going. Like there's 120 miles an hour. It goes all the way up to 300 miles per hour. And I'm telling you, this van absolutely goes flying. It's very fun to watch. It's very fun if you're just a big kid like me.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun to watch.
You go ahead and do what you're doing. I'm going to watch it.
All right. Right after this is Draft Mockery.
We're in the room and we're checking boards. Do you think we're being serious? Nah.
It's the Mockery Draft.
It is time for Draft Mockery here on the Cattles and Rami Show. Whitey in for Cattles, Jay Simone on the other side of the glass. If you're new to the show, Draft Mockery is very simple. We just draft random, fun, silly, stupid things.
Okay.
It's really that simple. Draft order today is Jay, Whitey, Rami. That's me and Simone. And today, inspired by a conversation that we had on Friday, you weren't here, Whitey.
No.
We were talking about this new venture that's about to open. It's like Top Golf, but with basketball. It's called Jump Shot Live. So you rent out a half court. You with your friends or a significant other or some combination thereof. You can order drinks, you can order food. And we got to talking, Whitey, about how that seems like good idea on the surface, but if you think about it just a little bit, terrible idea on a number of levels. The injuries that could happen with drinks flowing and more than anything, Whitey, dates that could go terribly, terribly wrong. Whether because of injury or because things maybe get a little bit too competitive.
Box out.
you know what I mean? I don't know about you.
I like it.
You
like it a lot.
Could you imagine someone boxing Simone out all of 5 feet and someone trying to box Simone out? She's in her cute heels and her dress and all, man, I'd die.
Get bodied, absolutely bodied in the paint.
We talked about it on Friday. Whitey, do you let the missus win if you're in a situation like that? Do you let her win or do you...
You're talking about basketball, right?
Yeah, sure.
No, we'll say, you don't let anybody win. Come on. No, of course not.
All right. I'm just saying. I don't know. But so it inspired us to draft today worst date ideas. Just the worst places and things you could do on a date or with a first date, significant other, wife, whatever the case might be. Just the worst date ideas. And again, the order is Jay, Whitey, Rami, and Simone. Jay, what's your first pick?
Yeah, first things first. I think a lot of people, we see it on television, all through the media, something that's played upon. But, you know, thankfully, I don't have this issue, but a lot of people seem to have this issue. I'm going to say one of the first worst dates, first things you could do is bring someone to meet your parents, your in-laws, the soon-to-be in-laws, hopefully if it works out, in-laws. But at the very first time.
On the first date?
Yeah, you know, some people don't like their in-laws 30 years in.
That's a bad idea. Yeah, don't.
Come on over, meet moms.
Don't do that. Whitey?
Yeah. I'm thinking again in terms of a first date. Hey, I want you to come with me and I insist you come in with me to the exam room. I'm going to go to the podiatrist to have my bunions looked at. And it means a lot to me. Come on, let's go. It'll be fun.
A doctor visit, first date.
Yeah.
That's just saving time. That's all that is.
My brother, very early on with his current now wife, She came to like a softball game that he was playing in, and he was coming in for a fly ball. Shortstop was going out. We've seen this happen in baseball, softball. And the guy rolled into his leg, snapped his leg, broke his leg. And she was like they had barely been dating, but she started like taking care of him right away, taking him to doctor's appointments, and worked out.
Why, she's the wife.
A nightingale situation.
I guess that is why she's a healthcare provider. Jay might be onto something. That is why she is the wife. I think for a first date, going to the movies is a terrible idea. You don't know this,
really.
Yeah, you don't know this person's taste in movies. I speak from experience.
It's a terrible first date.
I took a first date. This was just dumb. I was like 19 at the time. All right. I'm not just a dumb first date to see Howard Stern Private Parts. And
that's dope.
The movie makes a big difference. But I mean, you went meet the parents and I go podiatrist. You go to movie?
Yeah. No, I had it on my list too.
Why
it is
the movie?
It's
too intimate?
Well,
you don't,
yes.
Okay. You don't know their taste in movie.
And again, we're putting this all in the lens of like a first date. I think it's terrible because you have to be quiet.
You're not talking, getting to know each other. It's a bad idea.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
I don't see that one.
I think it's a bad idea.
All right.
I have two picks, don't I?
No,
Simone gets to go.
Hey.
I almost screwed that up again. Go ahead, Simone.
I, too, am thinking of kind of more of a first date situation here. And guys, I'm not feeling an escape room.
Okay.
I can see that. It could go really wrong.
True.
What if they're angry, they're not great problem solvers, and I guess that's cool to figure that out firstly, but I just think the escape room makes perfect sense. Problematic.
On a number of levels.
True.
I think unless you meet around a sport, like I've met women I've dated in the past, and it's centered around, somehow centered around a sport. So you go and watch a game or go to a game on a first date.
Yes.
If that's not the case, no sporting event, not at a bar, not at the game. You don't know how into it they are, and they might just be as bored as could possibly. Not everybody's into sports as I am and as we are is something I have to remind myself sometimes. And they're just bored and they're not into it.
Real quick, Simone, for your next pick is. I'm hoping you guys have talked. Like, man, you haven't hashed out something before you go on this first date. You just, you know what? What's up, man? I see you, boy. Let's go somewhere. I mean, you can at least fill her out, right? You know her name.
I guess.
No, but everyone peacocks a little bit, right? You're always putting, your best foot forward.
Oh, no,
I
love football. You don't love football.
Being exposed potentially by an escape room could be illuminating.
I'm with Simone on this. Whitey, back to you.
Nope, wait, Simone.
No.
You're skipping all kinds of things. Simone, go ahead, Simone. Yeah.
I think it's a snake draft, so it's back to me. I'm going to go with the firing range. Very similar kind of deal here. I don't think the firing range is where you should be pulling up for first date activities.
Okay.
All right.
Now back to me then?
No. Yes. Okay. Now back to you.
Now back to me. Sporting event. I just said it. I thought it was my pick, and I said sporting. I'll just go ahead.
So movies
and
a sporting event.
Yeah, no sporting events.
Goodness
I'm sorry.
Gracious, man.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It's wild because these are your favorite things.
I know. Right. I don't assume my favorite things are other people's favorite things. I don't want to subject them to that.
It sounds
thoughtful.
Like you and Emily have had this conversation once or twice.
All right. Righty, back to you.
I would say, again, first date, hey, I got a great idea. Let's go out to the dumps and look for stuff.
What?
Dumpster diving.
Not the dumpster. I mean, you could do that too, but you know, you ever go to the you go out to the dump.
Collapse.
Yeah. You go to the dump and you're like, well, look around, we'll find some stuff.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Would I?
Look.
Would I do it? I'm trying to
No, you wouldn't, Simone.
I mean, not
absolutely
like
not.
And if it has food in it. Probably
no,
not,
no
but
food,
what if it was like merchandise and it could be like a treasure hunt? I'm not out on that.
See, Simone, look, Whitey, the
have
man.
You ever been to the dumps? Yeah. I mean, come on.
I'm no. open.
It's a wonderland.
I'm open to it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely not.
My next pick, and there's movies actually based upon this, and I'm like, come on, stop playing with my emotions. I'm saying to a laundromat. Not taking a date to a laundromat.
Very good one.
Really?
No way, no how. Not doing
I didn't know people did that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's supposed to be like romantic and intimate.
There's movies based upon it. Was it My Beautiful Laundromat? Then Laundromat came out in early 2000 or middle 2000s or something, where it was just all about developing a romance at a laundromat and dates and stuff. Yeah, I've never seen it because I've never wasted my time. But, yeah.
She's got a good squad.
Yeah. Laundry.
And one of them is
love language.
I believe one of them has an award attached to it. Or
what?
Was, or
really?
Was, yeah, look that up. I think it was My Beautiful Laundromat or something in the
80s.
Pro Football Talk has given J&A for his draft.
Then my last one is, I wouldn't want to bring a day to attend a funeral or visit a loved one's resting place at the cemetery. I don't want to do that. You know,
that was on a couple lists I saw, and I'm like, man, how is that making a couple of lists? Who is doing that? Whitey, back to you.
No, I do need to object. I like going to cemeteries. It's beautiful.
Go ahead, Whitey.
Really
I just think for a first date, hey, let's go out and get you something nice. Let's go to Frederick's of Hollywood.
Ah,
first date.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
right.
An
that's
adult
a little
story.
Weird.
Yeah, that
that's
is.
A little weird.
Yeah,
that's a bit,
that was on my list too.
It's a bit
was
presumptive.
Way
that's
out
a bit
of
presumptive.
Yeah, yeah.
This I'll go back to what inspired this whole thing. Anything competitive other than bowling. I think bowling is the one competitive thing that you can do on a first date where it's not going to go terrible. Nobody's going to take bowling too seriously.
So you're not going with the batting cage?
I hurt myself bowling on a first date.
Well,
I slammed my
Simone.
Hand on the ground
That's Simone.
So hard, I blistered my hand and it was bleeding.
No,
so.
Batting cage isn't competitive. It's just you step in the cage and you do your thing. And maybe I give you a
what
few
about
pointers
pool?
Or you give me a few pointers. A pool I've seen get real competitive. Mm. Yeah,
that's a good first date, though.
Yeah, no, I could see that.
Oh, because then you're going to
exactly.
Over,
you
can
yeah,
pointers.
Come on, Simone. You see where I'm going.
Let me come up right
it's
behind
It's up on the
you.
Draft board, so I can't take it back. And also, we got to get to a break. But Jay might be on to
all
something.
Right, Simone,
your final break.
For me, a hike. Don't take me on a hike.
Yeah, that's weird. Let's go to the middle of the woods. Don't. If don't ask, and if somebody does ask you, don't just say no. If somebody asks you on a first date, let's go out to the middle of nowhere in a wooded area.
Where
nobody can find us. That's a bad idea. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, is LeBron really considering retirement? We'll discuss next.
Cattles
and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.